It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
You are watching and listening to Chris and Lester Till I Die TV on YouTube
and your favorite podcasts.
Till I Die TV, your first choice for everything Leicester City.
Tune in and join in now.
And now, here's your host.
Right, Chris.
All right, junkies, good evening. How the devil are we all? Or should I not ask? What I found quite funny was, just doing that intro there, you may notice that I always start the shows with "starting soon." Can somebody tell me when Leicester are going to start? Because I think we're still in the tunnel waiting to come out in that game. I don't know. Were we bad? Were Arsenal too good for us? Let us know your thoughts on Arsenal 4, Leicester City 2. This is Leicester Till I Die TV. Above me, you can see where all our socials are, and as well as, obviously, the one at the end, which is the podcast one. We're on all the major podcast platforms. Here's where we are.
Watch us on YouTube.
Listen on your favourite podcast platform.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Broadcasting live worldwide.
Let me know your thoughts, please, in the chat. Brad will be joining us in a minute. I did the watch along today, and I was having problems getting the stream, so I didn't really get a full picture of how Leicester played for long bits of the game. But like I said before, just were we that bad, or were Arsenal, who I've got to be totally honest with you, looked really on it today? I predicted them to be fourth in the top four. I think they will. They played so well. They made some great signings in the summer, you know, and as one of the headlines said today, Jesus answered Arsenal's prayers. I know I didn't write that, but it was 4-2. I mean, we've got our own Jesus, and what happens? Brad, good evening. Well, I'll say evening to you.
I was about to say, what's good about it? That was not fun, was it? I mean, I didn't expect much from this game, but, well, it's going to be fun to... It's not going to be fun to delve into. It's going to be painful to delve into, but it's going to be interesting to delve into it, Chris.
It is, and, I mean... If we'd been looking now at a 2-0 result, which is basically the same, would we be feeling as bad? I mean, there's just so many schoolboy errors in that, you know, what do they say when you scored a goal? That is when the opposition are the most dangerous. And we got hit not once, but twice. Brendan made some substitutions at half-time. And we'll go through all these bits in. You'll be pleased to know I've got a lot of notes down here. What the hell was Amati doing on that pitch again? And you know I like Amati. I thought he was our most improved player last season. But after last week's game, what the hell was he still doing on the pitch? Why were no changes made at half time? Because you could see how shit things were going for us. But obviously Brendan couldn't. I was, shall we say, a Brendan in sort of guy. I just not sure anymore. And I've just got to say this, you know, is it time now for the taxi? Or does he, you know, do we say, well, it's still early? I mean, let's see what Brendan had to say at the end of the game.
The answer is I don't have the first damn clue. My answer is I don't have the first damn clue.
You kind of believe that.
Well, I mean, you know, we sat here and we're trying to calm after the storm of the Brentford game. Probably sitting and saying, oh, one game, okay, yeah, okay, there was some issues that needed to be fixed, but la, 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 and all this. And we were probably going, all right, it's Arsenal way. You know, I can lose to Arsenal, especially away, because our record is beyond horrific. Yeah. But taking that aside, I can lose to Arsenal away if you play well for the entire game and you give all you've got. If you still get beat, you still get beat, because Arsenal were good. I'm not going to be one of them that sits here and says it's all
they deserved it. They were outstanding. Yeah, I've got them as fourth place, and I think they will be very unlucky if they don't end up there.
To be fair, they scored all six goals today because four were in the right net, one was an own goal, and Ramsdale let it go between his legs. That's the biggest rookie mistake I've ever seen, and we wanted him in number one in the Euros.
Yeah, I mean... But, I mean, as they say, and I've got to be honest with you, every cloud has a silver lining. Manchester United, as things stand, are bottom of the league. Maybe our 2-2 against Brentford last week doesn't look so bad now that they are stuffing Man United 4-0. But everybody, clip the Premier League today. And I'm not being horrible, but this will be the main story, obviously, on everybody's lips tonight. Match of the day and everything. But I mean, they've managed to keep it 0-0 in the second half at least. But yeah, Man United are bottom of the league. Let's just catch up with a few comments at the start. Scott, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good day. Maybe we should have started with the team we finished with. I seem to have more fight second half. I'm going to come on to that very point, Scott, soon. David, Hello, Chris, again. Nice to see you again, David. Hello, Chris. I'm upset that we looked off the pace at almost every point in the game, other than when Nacho came on. Defence was pathetic, to be honest. Watch every builder without trying to harass them. Scott said Arsenal well and deserved the win. I've got to agree with you, and I think Brad does as well. Facebook user, they could have battered us, to be fair, but taking second half chances could have ended a 4-4. I don't think it could, to be honest with you. I think, you know, it could have ended up embarrassing. David, I don't care that Arsenal as a unit is much better than us now, but really we looked good for maybe the first 20 minutes and at the end when Nacho came on with Daka. David, I really like Brendan, but I watched this game and I almost wondered if he tried to lose by playing a format that couldn't win. How you play three at the back and one up front? Why not Nacho and Vardy from the start? You know, there's so many questions. And I've got to say, I've got a lot here that I'm going to go through with you, Brad, as we talk about the game. But I just, when I saw the team announced, I mean, you like you say, 33 times now we've played Arsenal in the Premier League at some point in our history, going back to the O'Neill days. We've won five. We've only in that time ever won one at the Emirates. So I wasn't actually going into this game with a lot of hope in my heart. But surely it's the way you perform. And when I saw that team that he put out to start with, I don't see why he was still, you know, starting with a Marty still. Can you explain that? Am I being unfair here?
No, you're not being unfair. I find myself feeling sorry for Amarty because I wasn't voicing disgruntlement against Brentford because we have seen painfully, and not just with Brentford, with any Leicester manager, we have seen that when this team tries to play a three-man back line, it falls to ever-loving crap. It cannot play it. And you know, a lot of the points I'm going to be short and sweet with, because obviously there's a lot that you've seen that I'll go into it more in depth. The reason behind, you know, the people's frustrations and you know, every comment that's coming is actually right. And I'll do that more when my segment comes up. But Amarty is the scapegoat for Evans and for Fofana because Evans is now the club captain and very much liked. And Marty, because he's a splits opinion, and Fofana, because he's currently the god of defending right now across the globe, you'd think. And I'm not saying he's not really world-class. We know he is. We know he's really is, you know, doing us a favour by choosing us and staying with us now, because God help us when he goes. But nobody can play that three. We've seen Castagne sit in that three, can't play it. We've seen Ricardo in that three, can't play it. Thomas, we've seen them all. So it's not just Marty, he's just the lead wing. I'll try saying that sentence as more correct as our performance was. The weak link.
Yeah. No, I take that point. And when I'm, as you look, you know, I like Amarty, you know, not necessarily first choice, but he's a great squad player. And I went last season from moaning when I heard his name announced for the Community Shield starting lineup to giving him, I think I said he was my most improved player. But I said, I don't want to blame him. I'm blaming Brendan for picking him because you look, you know, he was playing on the left of a back three. He's right footed for sake. You know,
well, we got Sanchez
sat on the bench.
And again, I think you blame Brendan for picking anybody in that third position because, as you know, spoiler alert, in my team lineup, I think I've got Amarty on the right. So I never fathomed the idea that a guy whose predominant other positions are on the right side of the field would be on the left side. I blame Brendan for putting him there. I blame Brendan for specifically playing him there. And I also blame Brendan for making it so he has to play there because with this 5-subs rule, and I will agree with the people that suggested starting the next game, which won't happen, I'm afraid to say, but starting the next game the way we ended it with the formation-wise, because we just eliminate half our problems and can still play the football that we start off with. But it's going to be his own stubbornness that costs him this.
I think you're right. Like I say, you know, if Soyuncu is well enough to be on the subs bench for two games, if he is, his head is right enough with all the talk of him leaving to put him on the subs bench, and he's left-footed, I don't get it. I just do not get Brendan's thought there. And having watched the last game, I mean, you know, I've got here, Amati was at fault for the second goal because he just, you know, he lost the player he was supposed to be marking. He ran round in front of him and was too far in front of him and it went over his head. But should he be in that position? No, because Brendan shouldn't be picking him, to be honest with you.
It's either not picking him or putting him on the right side, isn't it? Because Soyuncu
and have him on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But again, I mean, I would still stretch that the three at the back is just doomed to failure for one of them, whoever it is. So whether it's Soyuncu.
I'm not a three at the back fan by any stretch of the imagination. You know, in fact, I would go so far as to say,
ladies and gentlemen, England will be playing 4-4-fucking-2.
I'm sorry, I'm old school, but three at the back, however way you want to, and I've only obviously got that quote, I haven't got any other 3-5-2, 7-5-6, whatever. I just, like you say, it's not working. We don't play well with the three. We can all see it as fans. Why can't Brendan? Brendan, I've tried to stick by you for so long. I'll criticise you on odd games, you know, the famous, you know, when he's brought Vestergaard on against West Ham, I will criticise him. But, I was thinking he was the man to take us forward. Now, I'm not saying he gets sacked in the morning, don't get me wrong, but I'm beginning to have those doubts.
Yeah, and the really, really frustrating part is you could see it coming.
Mm.
You could see it coming. And it's really frustrating how clear it is where the issues lie with this squad. And I'm now at the point where, you know, normally I jest because I am one of them. You know the game, you know the football management games I play in and what I do. No. And how you look at it and you're thinking, maybe it is really just that simple and Rodgers is just really that stubborn and that setting it in a way that you just can't see it. I won't answer this now why I'm making this statement, but I will say one thing that does concern me that I don't blame Rodgers for is why the players can't play this particular second way that we saw against Brentford and what happened the second Arsenal scored to how we played. I think the players have to take some blame for that, but that's something I'll come across later on, that little part there.
Letting in four goals, Ward had a couple of unfortunate comings together with Fofana, as in I don't know whether they're talking to each other or not. I know that there's going to be shouts, as well, we shouldn't have let Schmeichel go. Would that have been any different if Schmeichel, when we conceded from a corner again, but at least he seemed to try and come out for it?
I mean, first of all, there's absolutely nothing he can do about that first goal. That deserves, fair play. That goal deserves it. Martinelli won the last one. Again, there's not really much he can do. He's got the freedom of the park. That's what Madison and the Ori Tournaments and even Dewsbury Hall love to see. Do you remember, Chris, I'm going to try and jog your memory here. Do you remember a game against Doncaster Rovers, I think it was, in the Championship when we first had Kasper? And he spilt it into his own net. And we lost that game 1-0. I think we lost it. It was the only goal. He came and caught it and it slipped out of his grasp and it hit his chest and rolled over the line. He tried to scoop it out and the goal would have been given. It had clearly cost him by a mile. And I think that was early in Kasper's career as number one. And as soon as I saw it, I was angry and I was thinking, oh my God, we're signing number three and we all went, this is a disaster. I had Peter Taylor flashbacks, mate. I was having PTSD. Peter Taylor sodding disaster was going to be not right. And then I thought back to that moment, and I thought back to a couple of moments in early on in his career where, and I know Casper was a little bit younger than Wood when he took over, but you know, the first opportunity to play first team football properly at a high standard, and he's been very good up until that disaster of a moment where Ward, where's the other hand, mate? Why are you so casual with that one hand? You can see Fofana's there, and he takes full responsibility for that goal, but I can't remember how the other one went in now. But yeah, he's got that defence in front of him, being playing the way that, and I'm going to say told, because it cannot be a coincidence. 27 games playing the same style every time we concede a goal or we're 1-2 in a lot, cannot be a coincidence. Yeah. Playing the way they're told, he's going to have them goals go past him. It's what he did at close range, and he did make a few good saves, to be fair, when he was called upon.
Oh, yeah, he made a couple of good saves,
And I just thought I'd throw out that Doncaster memory that was lodged in my brain in the vault, the Leicester vault somewhere, and see if anyone remembers it, because that was, people were spitting feathers and that at Schmeichel then, so I'm not too concerned yet.
Yeah, no, we've got to look to that, you know, it is only his the second game of the season in that position, but you know, I mean, I've got to say this.
Scrap VAR, scrap it this weekend over the international break because it's worthless, pointless, a total waste of time.
I mean, I don't know. Did they get it right with the penalty?
Yeah, they did. It was soft. It was the minimalist of contact. Vardy's very good at them, but he's not won a penalty that soft since pre-VAR days, and that's the system being used, right? I've got to say it. I'll always be as honest as I can with VAR and how I saw it. It's never a penalty. And to be honest with you, apart from when it was 0-0, we didn't deserve a goal from that game. In fact, I even tweeted saying Arsenal generous to give us two goals for us by switching off.
Yeah, but if it wasn't a penalty... Because I was having this argument as I was doing the watch along with Miss Molina, and I was having this argument that if there's contact, it's a penalty, whether it's light contact or full contact. That if you make contact enough for a player to go down, it is therefore by definition it's a penalty. If he hasn't made contact, who's gone down, then Vardy should have got a yellow card for diving. So one of those two things had to happen there.
No, actually, funnily enough, there is contact, but nowhere near enough for Vardy to have bailed over. And I didn't see, and I don't know if anybody, you know, I'm assuming if you went the game, you must have got a better angle than what I was able to see in replays and that, because my stream was down as well. But I don't know where that ball goes after Vardy gets it past Ramsdale or where it goes and what the situation is. Vardy's very good at buying a penalty. And I think he was hoping Ramsdale would go on the full stretch. And if he did that, it was a penalty. It was going to take Vardy out. You know, there's no argument. He gets contact, so he can't be done for simulation. But it's not a penalty in the fact that Vardy shouldn't be going down there. If anything, he should be trying to stay on his feet because he might look up and realise if I draw that across the goal, there's another chance of another own goal there or someone in blue getting on the end of it, because that's all that we were chasing to get a ball in. He might have finally had an half open net and could have scored. We don't know. And that's... We had a few moments where players disappointed me today in some of the things they're doing. I'll say disappointed because we've known Vardy does that all along, so I don't want to be too harsh, but I was a little bit like, I understand it in a way, but I shouldn't have to understand it because he tried to buy a penalty in a way. It just wasn't a penalty.
Yeah. From where the referee was...
Yes.
It looked a penalty. It was a penalty from where he was positioned. It was a penalty.
I think you have
to say, David, that was this a clear and obvious error? And I have got to say, despite what I've just said, because obviously I'm playing devil's advocate here to Brad. It was a clear and obvious error because it took about four different angles for me to say it was only on the last one that went, yeah, actually. And it was like literally looking straight down at them with sort of in front of you. So I think it was a clear and obvious error in that occasion. We did say it took about four different views, and I didn't see that the referee was going to. I didn't even know he was going to go over to the monitor because I say my stream was playing up. But you know when that happens, and he's going to they're going to change their mind. You know, Terry said he's still. I'm still keeping my opinions to myself until five games at home and five games away. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is the old early doors. It is indeed. Scott says, ball went out for a goal kick. I thought penalty. I did, first of all, but, you know, after that, no. And then, for me, half-time. Now, looking at that half-time performance, and I'm going to quickly run through my points, and then, you know, we'll get on to general game, and then we'll get on to your analysis, which is great this week at the end. But when I look at that performance in the first half, I've got an Arsenal fan saying to me, why the hell is Amarty on the pitch? And like I say, I don't want to get into a blame game with Amarty. Like I say, he's been told to play in a position where he's falling over his own feet. So at half-time, you make substitutions. That is when you make substitutions. None were made, and I think it was the 67 minutes when Tielemans came on. And we went to 3-1. We went down to 3-1 and still no subs. And then finally Tielemans and came off, who I thought had an absolutely awful game. I don't know whether he was trying to be nice because he's playing against his future employees, but if he was actually trying to show off how good he was, I'm sure Arsenal would actually say, oh, if we've written the check, rip it up, because it was that awful today. And Amarty went off, but this was 62 minutes, like I say. By then, we'd conceded yet another goal. And then Daka came on. Now, Vardy had a bad game, right? And again, you could argue that he wasn't getting the service, etc., etc. But when you've got one player like that, do you bring on another player who plays as Daka does exactly the same way? Because if Vardy's not going to get into the game, how the fuck is Daka going to get into the game?
I think his idea was... and again, it's predictability. I mean,
you're giving him the option in saying that he had an idea. I mean, I wonder about that.
The idea is so predictable of how Brendan's become, because it's the transition that Brendan obsesses over. That sometimes, and this only seems to happen when we're losing. So he's got a transition period for when we're winning or drawing, and he's got a transition period for when we're losing the game. And when we're losing the game, like we were today, what he does is he'll stay with the formation, send it really deep, so it sits way back. He'll rest Jamie Vardy because he knows of his age and he wants to keep him being able to start and play as many games as possible. We know that for a fact. And then he'll put Daka on. And then what he'll do is, depending on how the result goes, he'll either stay that way or he'll sense an opportunity, and that opportunity will allow him to go, right, the game's lost, so we can rest players, or we'll get a goal out of nothing and we'll be back in it. And what he'll do is then he'll make the Amarty change, then he'll take the terms up. But everybody had a bad game today, in my opinion. But again, we're going to... And then it changes that too. And that's what baffles everybody, because by the time we start that, and it gets an instant impact reward, it still hasn't had a chance to settle. And lo and behold, I mean, Arsenal shooting today, you know, they could have had 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. However many shots they had, they could have probably scored the ball.
I'm going to drink on to that in a second. But then Iheanacho finally came on for Vardy. And I'm thinking, this is it, because Iheanacho was holding the ball up.
Yeah.
I think Iheanacho actually, did he not set up Vardy's, not Vardy's, Madison goal.
Yes, he did.
And I'm thinking, why the fuck wasn't that done at the start? Because if Vardy's not into the game, like I say, fucking hell, Daka's not going to be into the game. Get somebody on who can hold the ball up until Daka can get into a position, or Madison or whoever else is playing. Again, substitutions, I do not get it. Four were made by Arsenal. Three, at least he's gone up by two. Three were made by Leicester. Should he have made more?
Yeah, he should have, and he should have made the impact at different times. He should have again, this is sad to say, but predictably, he shouldn't have done what he was going to do when Arsenal scored. He shouldn't have told the players to play the way he was going to do. What he should have done is shuffled Ndidi forward a bit, put Amarte forward into the defensive midfield role whilst he got his subs prepared, taken Amarte off, dragged him out of the fire pit that we chucked him into by playing three at the back, swapped the formation, and we should have done that. We should have done that at 1-0. And people might say that sounds ridiculous and drastic, but I know it might sound like it's imagination of making this crap up. Try not to be too swearing, mate.
I've sworn, mate. When we lose, we're allowed to swear. Let me just say that.
Yeah. But before we played like that, else was shite, and I sound like I'm making it up, but I'm not. For what was it, 15, 20 minutes before they scored? Because that was a great game of football I was watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I even tweeted before I literally got the notification on my phone, pretty much, I think it was. Have I just witnessed Fofana go from defender to striker back to defender in the same attack? And we did actually play well for a bit, but again, we got the situation which meant regression.
I was sat here with Melina watching it. For the first 20 minutes, she was absolutely moaning about Arsenal.
Yeah.
She was moaning about Arsenal, saying, oh, we're not in the game. And I'm like, wow, okay. You know.
Well, I mean, I'd have been pulling my hair out being an Arsenal fan if I'd have seen their centre back running out our back line. I mean, Gordon Bennett, the way he hit the shot, I thought I had to stop and go like that. I had to get close to the phone to make sure I was spot on the shoot to get into the box. I thought
Louise, welcome along. The Bristol City's fans in, Anthony. How did Bristol City get on today, mate? Just asking for a friend. Did the early booking of Fofana must have had him on edge? It was an early booking. That referee was stopping the game at every opportunity he could.
Yeah, I think a lot of people normally fear a red card or expecting a red card in the afternoon when the referee shows a card early. There could have probably been a few more. Arsenal fans would probably argue with a few decisions that went their way or didn't go their way. And Leicester may have argued that it should have been a card or two dished out. But I don't know. I mean, we can sit here as much as we like and do our duties as people for the club and players and whatnot, fans and whatnot, and say that, oh, well, Fofana's not going to Chelsea, he's not doing this, and this won't happen unless they pay this much. And it doesn't matter how much we believe the talk, the fact that it won't go away, and the fact that it's 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 articles a day getting pumped out about it, you still have to remember that this is a young professional footballer. And I actually will say today, and I kind of look back at that moment, that I know I just picked it up saying he ran from centre-back to be strike partner for Vardy, you know, and that. But I feel he tried too hard today. And I'm not saying he was doing that to impress Chelsea or PSG or whatever. I think he was doing that to try and shake from his brain. He just wanted to concentrate his football and do the right thing. And again, this is another point maybe towards the problem that he looked at. There was a few players today that seemed to look frustrated. Obviously frustrated at the scoreline when we were 2-0 down, but I think they looked even more slumped and frustrated because they knew what that meant, how they were going to change and play. And that's something that does concern me, if nothing else concerns me about today's game.
And Louise, sorry, I had to get my words out there. No, I don't think they've put a bid in for Farm, not another one yet, that I've seen anyway. She says, I'm not worried about the season, it's too early. I do get what you mean, but look at the start of last season. We were very, very lucky against Wolves. Yes, we won it 1-0, but if Wolves have had their shooting boots on, we'd have got stuffed. I don't know who the second game was last season, but you could see within those first few games that this is going to be a tough season.
Yeah. I was just going to say that in arguments to this point, I understand that, and I do say it's still way too early to even make a decision because you're making it off shock. If you sack him now, you're making it off shock, and you've got to allow a manager. But I would ask you, Louise, go and take that game and watch it 90 minutes side by side to Arsenal away last season. And I don't think you'll see much difference. You'll see Leicester in the game right up until Arsenal scored, and then you'll see Leicester playing defensive, not being able to get out of their own half, being pressed. And I don't think you'll see much difference in the way we lost both them games, minus the extra goals thrown in for, you know, for shits and giggles. That, I think that's the biggest problem people have. And the reason people may be able to justify the idea that I'm just seeing last season again. And it's perfectly more acceptable for people to say, I'm seeing what I saw last season. Well, that's fair enough reason to have the idea that Brendan needs to be replaced. If it does come to that, I just hope the club don't do it too late, and also then go and make the right point.
I think, and I said this before, just to divert a little bit off topic, but in response to what you're saying, I honestly believe we've got the World Cup break coming up mid-November. That's for 4 weeks, and we come back, kick off Boxing Day, which is a week before the transfer window opens, or 6 days before the transfer window opens on the 1st of January. And I think there'll be a lot of managers looking over their shoulders when that World Cup kicks off, because that's, I think, when a lot of the club owners and chief executives and all those will be looking at it and going, like, can we make a decision? Now's the time to do it, because we can get a new manager in, we can work with the squad that's still here, and then he'll be here ready for the start of the window, and he'll know what he wants. So I think there'll be a lot of people, a lot of managers worried when the World Cup kicks off, which is obviously kicking off now a day earlier, because FIFA hadn't realised they'd made the cock up in letting Qatar kick off second, have the second match, which would have been a bit late in the evening for them, and it would have made it really nice and cooler. And they've now, FIFA being FIFA, have decided, oh no, they're the home team, maybe they should be kicking off first. So well done, FIFA, for catching up with the rest of the world. I want to ask you this though, Brad, and this is the thing I've got at the back of my mind, and I can't get it out of my mind, is that Brentford last week, it was two tale of two halves. We're really good in the first half, bang average in the second half. Today we have played a team that is evolving and is getting better, and have made some top-class substitutions. I mean, apparently some of the Arsenal fans are saying that they've been given Manchester City cast-offs. But I'll tell you what, I think most clubs would have taken them, cast-offs or not. And I say I've got them to finish fourth. I think they've had a really good... I think Arteta's going to change things around. He just now needs the time. But they've made some excellent signings. They've got rid of the troublemakers. Were we that bad, or did we just come up against a team today playing at home that is going to be challenging for one of those top four positions?
Oh, we definitely played a very good Arsenal side. I made no qualms in speaking about how I rated Arsenal's transfer acquisitions this season.
Yeah.
You know, they got rid of their three. They finally learned third time was a charm to stop paying people 300 grand a week, and they've gone out, they've invested their money, and they've been patient, and now they've got good quality players in. Sinchenko was getting in a side that was winning titles. Gabriel Jesus was getting in a side that was winning titles. They were both playing in games where they were winning silverware, and it didn't matter what round it was in, they were still doing it, they were still part of it, they were still scoring goals, getting assists, playing well. And, you know, Gabriel Jesus, the price they paid for him was absolute steal. He was one that when I saw that, I thought, there's not a chance. He's not, surely not. And now, when they got him, I thought, this could be somebody that, I'm not saying he will, but if you like to go for the dark horse, you might want to put him on, maybe a top three for Golden Boot, because he could really thrive under that. I mean, he could have started the season in double figures today.
Yeah.
You know, and he had more of a shooting boots on. But God, he didn't bother lacing them up.
I'm going to come to a comment by David and a comment by Louise in a second. But one last question before we go on to a couple of slides. Yesterday I was on two Arsenal channels. Before we did our Q&A last night, it was awful. And I've got to be on. I've got to say to Luca, the Arsenal fan, that within 2 minutes of the game finishing, sent me his match preview, and a message. I said, "Why have you sent me that?" And he said, "Oh, I thought we might help each other with viewers." I went, "We've just lost 4-2 to you. Do you think I want to really watch an Arsenal fan talking and gloating about it?" But I did actually just go because Stephen asked, you know Stephen, don't you? He asked me to go on his channel last night. And in fairness, I went on with Ant and we got a bit of our own back because we had a bit of a Rodgers disagreement, which was, he usually has an Arteta disagreement on it. So we got our own back. I thought I'll just nip on to see whether they're still moaning or not. And I typed in, "Good win for you guys. You deserved it. Well done. Surely nothing to moan about now," or worse to that effect. And you know what? He was moaning. He was moaning at Arteta's game management. You've just won a game 4-2. It's like if you go out and beat Manchester City next time you play them at the Etihad and you beat them 5-0, you will complain that Arteta had the wrong colour suit on. I mean, I just don't know where these Arsenal fans get off. I really, really don't. But just to go, just to say, get these comments in before we sort of change tack a little bit. David says, you might want to comment on these, Brad. Today was one of the first times that KDH looked ordinary and had no real impact for us. That engine he was missing. Maybe our midfield was too congested once again before we hit long ball too often.
Yeah, it was. It was a painful one. It was one to have KDH to go missing was, I mean, the whole team did. But even one.
I mean, let's be honest with you. You know, he's got to have a, you know, he's not going to have brilliant games every time. Louise, it is a very good point, and it always is. If we get rid of somebody, who would we get in? You don't know. I mean, who would want to come? Now, you see, I used to say this, who would want to come? Ancelotti, and the big names wouldn't, to be honest with you. Mancini would probably look at us and go, no. We know Ancelotti would, because he never came to us before. But there will be managers that will go, look how much money Brendan was on. I'll get that. Knowing, because when you apply for a job as a manager, and you're offered that job, you know that if you're bad at it and you get sacked at it, you're going to get a very nice payoff, thank you very much. There's no other job that I can think of that pays so well for total inadequacy.
Yeah, and again, I understand Louise's point, and it's just make a good one. What is available? There's not enough. My thing would be against that is I am minus Ranieri because his reputation with Chelsea. I am struggling to think of a manager we had in the last 20 years that has been memorable, that has got a big name stamp to them, that has come with a huge pedigree. Because people are saying, who would replace him with? Like, we're expecting the Pep Guardiola, so even though I think he's a fraud, but that's for a debate show. Might think of that myself. Thanks for that, Brad. Good idea for future, Brad. Anyway.
One down.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Was Gary Megson a pedigree manager? Was Ian Holloway a pedigree manager? Martin O'Neill may have developed a bit of a legacy at Leicester, but he wasn't really a pedigree manager until his time at Leicester, if I'm being honest. Where he'd managed before, let's be honest, he wasn't, was he, Chris? Not Martin O'Neill. I hadn't really achieved too much in the big wide world of football until he...
I mean, let's be honest with you, it wasn't long into his stint at Leicester that fans were destined to get him out.
I think it was a loss or a draw or something against like Sheffield United or something.
Indeed it was, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, we've never actually had, you know, I say Ranieri because he's Chelsea. You maybe want to push the boat and say Brendan Rodgers because of that one season with Liverpool and Celtic. But we're seeing with the Scottish League that it's returned to normality. Can you do it, Chris? You've got far better Leicester history than me. When was the last time you looked at our Leicester manager history? I'm not saying what they've won and what they achieved. What I'm asking is pedigree. Are we talking, have we ever had anything close to Antonio Conte, a or Roberto Mancini.
Are you saying that I can't include Craig Levein in that?
Oh, no, that was Scottish Leicester. They were obviously in a whole new history book themselves. They were Muck Leicester. That's that.
I tell you the last time I believe we really did it, Ranieri, whilst I thought he was good when he came in, he had this reputation. It was said before that he always does well wherever he goes that first season, and then he struggles once he starts tinkering about with the team. Even then, let's face it, he didn't come and, the whole football world didn't go, wow, Ranieri's gone to Leicester. They went, what? Ranieri's gone to Leicester? That's a bad move. Nobody was bigging him up. So Brendan Rodgers did get that. But I tell you, the last manager that I really, really thought that, and a lot of managers came and made their, like Martin O'Neill, he'd just come from Wycombe Wanderers. But after us, he then had a name for himself. But the last manager was Jock Wallace, who had come down from Glasgow Rangers and I think he'd just won the treble with them. Sounds familiar, this, doesn't it? And I think he'd won something like 9 on the trot or something ridiculous when he came to us. And literally, the whole football world just went, what? And that was the last time I can remember. But you don't necessarily want a manager like that. You know, would we want to? Mourinho or somebody like that. We couldn't afford a Conte because they'd just want to spend millions and millions and millions. But,
And I only make that point just to counter-argue people saying, oh, well, who would have gone after? Well, who are you expecting? That would be the better question, because if you're expecting us to go after an Ancelotti or whatever, you're wanting us to go after a Benitez, you've got to look at our club history.
Yeah.
In terms of its managerial appointments, it's very, very rarely Leicester make a managerial appointment, and you've only named 3, and Rodgers is out of push because of, I'm saying it's out of push, that kind of make Leicester fans go, how the hell have we done that?
Yeah.
And one of them was before I was born.
No, I agree totally. Right, we are going to do your favourite bit, which is stats, but there's a reason I want to do it. I know you don't like it, but we'll do that straight after this.
Hello, Matt Elliott here.
Hi, Alan Smith here.
Hey guys, Ian Hume here.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here.
Be sure to watch
Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV
for all the latest Leicester City news and information.
You can also subscribe on YouTube and various social media channels
for the latest updates and news on Leicester City Football Club.
Come on, you foxes!
Indeed, do what Jerry Taggart and they all say there. Subscribe to the channel, please, if you haven't already. And if you are subscribed, please smash the likes. And talking of Jerry Taggart, if you go onto my Facebook or my Twitter and just scroll down, you will see Jerry's wife and a couple of their best friends are doing a walk. I'm not going to pronounce the mountain because I don't know it, but they are raising money for the Cyril Regis Foundation. And I know what you can say to me, well, you know, not Leicester and all this. But Jerry Taggart was very, very good friends with Cyril Regis. Jerry Taggart is a great friend of the channel. You know, he's an ex-player. He doesn't have to talk to us and whatever. He said he'll probably come on later in the year. Got a lot of respect and time for the guy. And let's face it, he nearly strangled Dennis Wise on the pitch. So you've got to love him just for that. So get over to the Just Giving page. Make sure you donate. Press the old tax button and everything and give him some support. And if nothing else, it gives him 10 days of peace and quiet, he said, with his wife not being there. So that's very much worth it just for that. Now, the thing I want to do with this is I'm surprised at the 50-50. I'm not going to lie to you with the possession, but we'll ignore possession because it's not worth the paper it's written on. But goal attempts, 19 to Arsenal, 6 to Leicester, 2 of which were on goal. I mean, is that good enough? And I know I went through this last season and it is a bugbear of mine and I will be coming back to it every time. 6 shots, I mean, come on, it's just not good enough for a Premier League team.
No, and the thing is, Arsenal probably had one of them for us. I don't know if it'd count that. I don't think they're involved.
Very true.
I mean, I don't think they do count own goals as a shot towards it, unless they're classing it as a shot off target, maybe. So maybe one of them shot off targets that's ended up going off his head. I don't know. I don't think it would be. But the saddest thing is we probably had five of them, six shots, if it's not including the own goal, in that first 20 minutes. Because apart from the little... And I'll tell you what, one spark of a joy from that second half, apart from the full-time whistle, so all them poor Leicester fans could go home, was the reverse pass from Iheanacho for Maddison's goal. Regardless of how poor Ramsdale was with letting him get a nutmeg on him, that was a glimmer of hope that I saw from there, because it was a lovely bit of intricate play. It's a thing that I thought I'd never see Leicester doing that entire 90 minutes after they took the lead, because it was the only time of it.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it is a case of, I just, corner kick 6-2. I mean, we conceded from a corner again. We touched on this earlier. We've got a set piece coach coming in, but he can't come in. It's a joke. He can't get in because of a visa problems or whatever. I don't know. Sometimes it's becoming like a soap opera.
Honestly, mate, this chart probably does tell the story of how it feels. If you said to a non-football fan, there is four divisions in England, what division are these two teams in? They just played each other. You'd probably say Leicester are in the second division and Arsenal are in the first division, because that looks like an FA Cup third round game, doesn't it? Where the plucky underdogs have tried to see out as much as they can. They probably had it 2-0 to the very end and Arsenal nicked it 2 late goals and the dominance were told. That's what it feels like. I listen to and watch in patches, because this is probably the only time that the stats don't tell a lie, mate. They tell how the game was, because it's all red in the good areas that you need it to be in to win a football game.
Yes, yeah. I've just put the link in the chat, by the way, for the Just Giving page. It is, like I say, supporting underprivileged children. If it's only a fiver or a tenner, just please get over there and help Jerry. Like I say, he always helps us. So I'm more than happy to try and help him back. And, well, I got rid of Brad then instead of the thing. But are you ready, ladies and gentlemen? It is time for Brad's Tactics.
You are watching Leicester Till I Die TV with Chris and Chums. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and Pinterest. All you need for everything Leicester City FC. It's Leicester Till I Die TV.
There we go. They're bringing Brad onto the pitch. Maybe they should have done that in the game. We might have got something from it then. But are you ready for this, Brad?
Yeah, I am ready for this.
I've got the spreadsheet already. here we go.
Well, this was fond memories, wasn't it, people? This is how Leicester lined up, and this is where it all started to go wrong, didn't it? Oh, we have Chris re-entering the stream there. So Leicester lined up with their 5-3-1-1 formation that they started against Brentford in that layout. It's definitely what we've learned from these two games, and we learned from probably, like I said, 20 odd games last season, depending on how many games we actually played with it. It felt like a season. We cannot play the three man at the back. It does have its advantages in terms of what we do, but it's just not the formation for Leicester. The formation, in case you missed it, starting lineup, warning goal. I've got Fofana on the left there. Yeah, call me intrigued when I thought the right-footed centre-back would play on the right. So I got a mark on the right, and obviously club captain and the anchor of that ship, Johnny Evans in the middle. We had Justin on the left, Castagne on the right, KDH, and Yuri basically essentially playing as the double pivots. Maddison in front of them to plug the gap between that, and obviously our most, one of our most infamous is number nine, Jamie Vardy, was up top. So how do Leicester play? Well, it's like having split personalities, because as Chris will show you on the next slide that we're going to go to here. No, that's not what I... That's from the last game, mate.
I thought I'd updated it. Hang on one second.
We have a technical error. Someone get in touch with Neville. Neville and Carrigan.
Yeah, it never goes wrong for them, does it? Let's be honest with you. We went through this before we started, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We did.
In the right order. And it hasn't updated, which is absolutely fan-dabby-dozy, with a dose of salt. Right, let me just see what we've got here.
We'll have a please standby moment. That's what we've got.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do appreciate your call. Right, so this is where we were.
Yeah, so we've done this. Right. This is how Leicester play at 0-0. And I saw this against Brentford, and this is what really excited me in that first 45 minutes. And I know it sounds far-fetched after what you've seen today, but we actually played really exciting football for a total of 60 minutes, 45 minutes against Brentford, and about 15-20 minutes today. Don't need to really see the names. If you can zoom in, you can see the names yourself, but this is just for purpose to help me out design them. I saw us play at the halfway line with the likes of Evans and Fofana and Amarte. And Amarte and Fofana were spreading a little bit wider whilst we forced Arsenal back, and midfield has the hold of Ndidi. So that allowed KDH and Yuri to be even further up on the press. It allowed Justin and Castagne to do exactly what they do the best and stretch an Arsenal defence. And with it being stretched and our defence being playing such a high line, what it also allowed was for one of them to push them even further back on the side. And what that actually did, if you can see my hand movements, is it just pivoted the Arsenal defence. And you don't really need to, you probably see where I've laid Castagne a bit further forward and I have Justin on here. That was to indicate the little pivot to push and squeeze defence out of shape. So let's spread that ball to the opposite side and then get in behind with Maddison, with Youri Tielemans, and most importantly, Jamie Vardy being in a more attacking and divert route. And we saw that today for the bit part of the start, and we saw that against Brentford with the goals we scored and with the shots we were having. And we've talked about it a lot today because it happened fairly early on. But as you'll see by this next slide, if we've got the right one in charge, we concede. Now, I haven't just flipped the board. You are correct in what you're seeing. Vardy's standing there going, "Oh, by myself," because he doesn't want to be all by himself. And we'll get to that in a minute when he's in his happy place, Vardy, where he will be for the rest of the season if Brendan stops winding us up. But what happens is we completely capitulate because, and I can't remember which one of you commented it earlier, and I do apologise, but you're getting credit here because I was, as you're seeing here, I did notice it myself. When we're too close together, we're like a freaking pinball machine. We are panicked at seeing blue in front of us. We cannot play with the layers doing it, but Brendan insists on it. Our back four practically sits in the box. Castagne and Justin, as you can see, they're practically on the edge of the box. They're not waiting for it on the sidelines. They're waiting for it at the edge of the six-yard box, even waiting to collect a cheeky rollout from Ward if he was there. They weren't doing that at 0-0. They didn't do that at 1-0 turn against Brentford. Ndidi, KDH, and Yuri make a three-man, essentially, defensive midfield. They don't play the little V that I showed you at the start, where it's just, where it's just Ndidi and he's got Yuri and KDH in front of him. The three of them were there. Madders was the halfway line hold-up, and Vardy was there going, "If you can see me, send the flare, send ships, I need help." And that cost us so many games last season, and guess what? It cost us again today. So, what happened when it was all just a little too late? It did this, didn't it, Chris? This is what happened when it's all a little bit too late. And this is the Leicester that in the second half impressed us and got us a goal. Gave us that little glimmer of hope for about the 12 seconds we allowed ourselves to concentrate before we went 4-2 down. And that was a back four. Hallelujah. We got a back four. Ndidi back, not being suffocated by two other defenders. some breathing space so we can drop in and help the defence out so they're not colliding into each other. We had the two pivots back. We had an attacking number 10. And even though at this point, I believe I might have changed it to what it became Nacho and Daka, you understand where Vardy's going to sit in that role with Daka being on the pitch. It'd be Nacho and Vardy or Daka. The point was, we got a goal from that. Yes, we conceded 12 seconds later, but that's just momentum of a goal and the fact that we'd only just switched this. And that is what we need to start doing. The one thing that does question me, and we will get onto it, with how I'm summing up our tactics and how I'm summing up maybe Leicester at the moment as a whole, onto the final side, the summary, if you will. The talking points that my clock has chimed into. As soon as my clock wants to stop, I will do that. So, talking points. Well, clearly we fear conceding goals. And it's becoming something that's very, very nervy. I don't remember a game in a long time that Leicester have looked comfortable being 2-1 up with 4 or 5 minutes to go. I remember a season and that run where they played Vardy and Nacho up front and everything was sunshine and roses. And even if we did concede, we only looked like scoring because it looked like it pissed us off. Do you remember them seasons, Chris? They were good times, weren't they?
Oh, in the dim and distant past, yes.
Yeah. And this is where I think I'm going to get onto this point a bit more just quickly, but we still allow our past to haunt us. Now, that blame is technically, you could argue, not completely on Brendan, but the majority would say it's all on Brendan. And that comes down to two things. The set-piece defending. That's not the first time Vardy's fringe has caught a ball and flicked it on. You know, we did that against Manchester United at home. Why are we persisting with it? But then you have to look at these players and say, hold on a minute. This is 4 years you've been training now with this manager. Why can't you get to grips with it? You know, because as it says here, although I agree that stubborn Brendan will cost him and the players seem to get frustrated trying to play a defensive team. Again, my last 2 points kind of summing it all up to one. We are high-pressing attacking side, which we've shown we're very capable of and very dangerous, may I add, at playing. We are not a team that can sit back and sit deep and play it out slowly from the back and have 7 or 8 players in our own half and only one or two barely over the halfway line. But my question is that a limitation in the squad's ability that we cannot play that way when we need to? Because you need to be able to shut out games. One of the biggest cries from Ranieri thing is we couldn't keep the bloody ball out of net no matter what the score was, whether it was a 5-2 defeat like we had to against Simmerar, we were winning 3-2s. And this is now we're seeing the next side of it. And it's one of them is going to cost, both incidents are going to cost someone their job and they're going to cost Leicester dearly this season in terms of where they'll finish and what they'll achieve or won't achieve if they keep doing it. So, Brendan, if you like your job, stop playing as a defensive team. If it's the players that can't get to grips with it, maybe you just have to realise the limits of your squad. We say this about managers being limited. You know, I think there's a very high bracket, very limited cut-off point of elite managers. I'm talking serial winners like your Jose's and managers such as that that gone down the end. And I think sometimes, even though we've got some class players, we've got a limited squad. And I think when you look at that squad as a team and process it, they're a team that their best 11, Leicester's best 11 plays 4 at the back, it plays 3-4-3 or 4-3-1-2 and it goes on the attack. You know that classic England song, we're going to score more goals than you. You know what, if I watch Leicester play this game in reverse and win this 4-2 and play like Arsenal then, happy days. I'm exactly like Arsenal. I'd rather see that than see us lose a game 4-2 the way we did. And that was why we lost the game. And it's why Brendan's going to lose his job, because the team can't play it, which is a bit disappointing, but maybe shows the standard of our team's overall quality. And his stubbornness is going to cost it. We need to play like that slide at 0-0. We need to play that high press at the halfway line, because otherwise we go defensive. And guess what? Arsenal never let us get out of our own half because they were allowed to casually press us. And that's why we badly lost today, Chris.
I agree. Great, great analysis as always, Brad. Thank you very much. Is there a saying that as a manager, you use your team's strengths So if he's had 4 years to look at this and go, well, this is the way I want to play. And let's be honest with you, he has had a few transfer windows now when he can get players in to want to play his way. But then he should be going, well, they can't play that way. So let's have a look and we'll play the way that I will get the best out of my team. That's what Ranieri did.
Yeah, you know, he did.
When he came in, all right, when he left, that was a different matter. When he came in, he only tinkered with it, but because he knew that was the strength of that team.
Yeah, but unfortunately, every manager's the same. They'll let the first season go, or maybe first season and a half, depending on when they get appointed as a manager. And they'll bring maybe a player or a couple of staff members in, and it won't change too much. But you'll always find, if you look back through the history of any manager's career at your club, you'll probably find that the ones that did a bit of success had periods, even in their successful years, where you went, why did we play like that for 7 games? Why did we suddenly have a 5-man midfield? We've never played a more 5-man midfield. He's been here 2 years now. Why is he suddenly playing a 5-man midfield? I tell you what it is. It's the itch. It's the itch to win your way. It's the itch to win your way. And as a manager, no matter how good you could be the boss that brings all the cookies and the beers in at 4 o'clock on a Friday and let every guy home early and casual Fridays at work. But guess what? You want things doing your way because that's why they get paid. And that is what I mean by stubbornness. If Brendan wants to do it, exactly like you said, mate, he has to then go out and get these transfers to swap into that. Otherwise, play to the team strengths, not the individual.
It is. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. It is. You play to the team strength. Brad, that was brilliant. We'll just have a very quick break while I turn my light on, and then we'll be looking at and rating the players.
In a world where cat videos and memes rule the feeds,
watch us on YouTube.
Listen on your favorite podcast platform,
or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Lester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow, and join in now.
And David says, totally agree with your last point. My last point. I don't know, David. I think you've been having the pints, not me. Totally agree with your last point, Chris. 100% correct. If we can't do with what Brendan wants or would like, then play to the strengths of what you have. Square pegs and round holes will infrequently work. Quite right. So, young Brad, let us go and have a look and see where you are going to put the players. Now, bear with me, because with these players, I can't see who they all are. But we'll start with Ward. I think I've still got Schmeichel on there as well, to be honest with you. But let's start with Ward. Now, we've not gone 1 to 10. We've gone we've gone the old school way, A, B, C, D, and U for ungraded. Where would you put Danny Ward?
I'd probably put him. See, I know people are instantly going to go, "Oh, but he had a hanger, he had a nightmare." So did Ramsdale. To be fair, he made some good saves. He was alert. It was sod all he could do about Gabriel's goal. He couldn't do anything about three of the four goals. So I'm going to give him a C. Because again, I go back to how we started the show. Castro made mistakes early doors, but if it weren't for Ward, it would have been 7 or 8 or 9 mil.
He made some good saves. So you are going to give him a C. Oops, let me get my right mouse. And with any luck, and I can't see the main screen, so you can tell me if that's worked.
Yes, that's worked, mate.
That has worked. Right, so next we are going to go for, I feel bad now, but we're going to go for Amarte.
You know what? I'm going to save his blushes. I'm going to give him an E because it's apt.
We don't have an E.
Sorry. He's going to... I'm not going to save his blushes. I thought we had an E then and there.
Classified.
All right, I'm going to give him an F because he was fucking executed by Brendan today, playing him in the back three on the left-hand side. I'm going to give him an F, mate. An F. I said I'm going to give him an F because he was effing well executed by Brendan when he played on the left side.
No. Okay, so where are we putting him?
bottom, mate, because I actually get the feeling I'll get a knock at my door if I put Man United in there with the.
At the end of the day, mate, you know, you know, it's your choice, so to speak.
He did have a terrible game today, but I don't technically put all the blame at him. A right foot on the left hand side, he does no Leicester player seems capable of playing a back three. Why do we keep playing it, Brendan? For fuck's sake, sort your life out, mate.
I probably wouldn't have gone as low as I'd have probably given him a D because, like I say, I wouldn't want to blame him too much because he's doing what Brendan's told him to. But you know,
yeah.
But I do totally see where you are coming from. So, Mr. Evans,
I'm going to give him a C. Don't think he did a lot wrong.
No.
The only concern I have is how boisterous is he? But he was fairly solid. He got the only assist. He would have got the assist today, wouldn't he? I think if it was for his long punt up that led to a goal. So he can still make a pass, can't he? So yeah.
Somebody said that. And you know, everybody's entitled to an opinion, totally 110% they are. And very much agreeing with Craig, they say he's too slow and he won't get rid of the ball quickly enough. But on the other side of that, I like him because he doesn't just hoof it up and hope that it will find somebody. Mm. He actually puts his foot on the ball and goes, right, where can I?
Yeah. And the thing is, Fofana provides that for him because of how he makes his long bursting runs. You know, yeah. So if he does go far forward and he does make 25 yards, he knows without even thinking about it, I can lay this at an angle 20 yards back and Evans is going to be there to pick it up. And like you said, he can spread it or he can knock the ball over the top to catch the opposition out.
Mr. Fofana, who at the end of the game walked over to the away fans, which were Leicester fans, and applauding them. And to which Brendan got asked afterwards, is that him saying goodbye to the Leicester fans?
Oh, he's always going to get asked that until the window shuts and the new one opens.
I would like to think that he's gone over to applaud them for coming down and supporting the club, which is what most players, unless you call Ronaldo, is what most players do at the end of a game, especially the away game.
I mean, for the best part of that game, he was our best striker.
Yeah.
His best chance.
First half, I thought he was our best player.
Yeah, and again, miscommunication with Ward. I think Ward takes the blame from that. I've seen a few angles of that goal, that miscommunication, and Fofana has no reason to move because it seems like Fofana suddenly takes his off the ball to look at Ward as if to go, what are you doing? And then when Ward doesn't get a full grip on it and drops it, there's only one outcome. But Fofana can't kick out and clear the ball because the Arsenal player's seen the spillage and he's moved close to that. Had that ball just dropped, Fofana would have probably brought it down, played it out, and would have been fine.
Yeah.
So I'm free spoilers for everybody. I'm not going higher than a C. So he can go in that category because...
You see, again, I would have probably given him a B, but...
I'm sorry, we lost...
No, mate. You're choosing. I'm just saying, giving my opinion. And like I say, with Amati, I would have given him a D, but he's in you because that's what you've gone for. You are the person that's putting these players in there. Now, for me, I agree with you totally. As the player that's coming for the ball... You're the one that shouts, leave, or whatever your communication is. You know, he's only got one hand to it. Who knows if he hadn't collided, it may not have spilt the way it did. But no, I'm sorry, that is the one thing I would call out Ward for. He should have shouted. I can't blame Fofana for that. Mm. So the next player is James Justin.
I'm going to give him a C. Fairly solid. Looked good when he was allowed to get forward. Didn't have a struggle down that side. So, yeah, a C. fairly solid grade for Justin.
Okay, I've got to find him in my list of players. They're that small. I've got to go.
Is he far right on the top row? Top row.
That's that.
Yeah, go over again. No, is that him? Is that him? Yeah.
I think I've got him there, haven't I?
Yeah, I think Ralph. I think you have.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. What did you give to him?
C.
C. Okay. Dewsbury Hall.
Can I be perfectly frank and honest with people? People might castrate me that went there. I didn't hear him. I barely heard his name. And it wasn't until the BBC Sport reminded me that we'd made substitutions. And did he'd come off, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known until that was told to me again. That's how...
Did he come off?
Well, if he didn't, then I'm not sure how, because no, I didn't hear his name.
No, he didn't come off.
Didn't hear his name. And again, okay, you have to be correct that, but I'm rating a performance, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because he's a guy who I feel like we've given Mallard a match to since the day he started playing for Leicester. Yeah. I'm going to give him an F.
Or you, in that case, yeah.
Well, you, yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm force of habit.
You's only because I'm old and I remember that we used to, that's how it used to grade when I was at school. But then again, we had chalk and blackboard.
Oh, yeah, we had grades A, B, C, D, E, F, and then U. So.
Oh, well, yeah. We had an E. We didn't have anything, we had an F. We had an E, but it was down to space, to be honest with you.
I don't blame you. This is easy anyway.
Ndidi. I think it was a case of no Ndidi today, wasn't it?
Yeah, again, I think he goes into the F section. A few times I heard his name, a few times I saw him on the ball. I honestly feel like that first 15, 20 minutes was like a vague dream that I'm trying to remember and I'm trying to tell the story, because I cannot remember our midfield seeing much of the ball. So, yeah, he goes in the F for me, mate. Yeah, or you, sorry.
Yeah, it'd be easy for just me to change it to an F, wouldn't it? Really,
it will be at some point. But you know what'll happen is you'll give in and change it to an F, and I'll stop saying you.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, you're not an awkward sod by any stretch, are you? I mean, apparently, when he walked off the pitch when he was substituted, Arsenal fans were cheering him and saying, "See you next week." Yuri, I mean, if that's the sort of performance he's going to put in, all I can say is hurry up and go.
To be fair, I'm sick of the whole Yuri, but I'm sick of him being individualised as well. And I understand why and I get it, but you want me? Look at the ratings we're giving. Minus probably four, everybody else is going to be second or bottom of this list in terms of grade. An awful game, and he can't. And again, I'm not defending him, and I understand that with the contract situation, it's easy to suggest two and two together make four, but I still feel like you shut his freedom off. What are you expecting from him?
Yeah.
And he can't perform when he's being told, get back in your own half, don't be dare across the halfway line, you'll get shot by a sniper if you do, because we're losing the game, and I want to play defensive. No. When you've got Yuri on the front foot, and you've got them three going at the attack, at the defending line of an opposition, you'll get Yuri Tielemans playing at his best. If he goes next week and join Arsenal, good for him. I hope he loves it in London. I hope he enjoys his bloody life. But right now, I just want this window to end. To be honest, it's getting on my nerves that much. And everybody individualising our team when it's a bad performance all round. I mean, yeah. Tielemans does get a U, but there ain't many that are getting out of that section either after today's performance in game.
Fair enough. Timothy, Mr. Castagna.
Again, after that first little spell, he died off. I think he kind of got a bit more involved when we switched to the two. Surprise, surprise, when you stretch the play again, what we can do. So I'm gonna give him a D, but he did go very quiet for stretches of that game. So I'm going to put him in the... He's there all alone, bless him. Or can we just put Casper in there to give him company? So I'm not sure where he's going to find what brackets in the atmosphere.
Have I put the right one in there? I think I've got Castagna, haven't I?
Well, I think so, because his head looks cut off on my screen, and Castagne just looks
his head is cut off, and I don't know why, but there we go. Okay, so after Castagne, we had Madison, who I've got to be honest with you, you say about dirty leads. Every chance they got to stop Madison, they basically took him out of the game. And it wasn't until about the 70th minute that they actually got a booking for it.
Yeah, but that comes with the territory of playing the number 10 role. It comes with the territory being good at set pieces. And people can say what they like about it. You can definitely take a free kick. He scored a goal. So I think I'm still going to give him a D, though, because the midfield really didn't... I didn't hear them a lot. I didn't hear them at all, really. I can't give him a C just because he scored, I'm afraid, because it's just not possible enough. He didn't get a chance to do a lot. And again, that's a lot of credit to Arsenal and another bemoans towards how we played the majority of that game for. Yeah. You know, I think the ratings really do reflect how he had us play.
Yeah. And Mr. Vardy.
You know what? I'm gonna give Vardy a U.
Yeah. And it wasn't necessarily his fault, because again, you know, he was probably, you could argue that he was feeding on scraps.
Yeah. Again, this is a game I'm struggling to remember hearing a Leicester name, unless I heard, oh, they've scored. And the only thing that Vardy's noted for in this game was his soft way of going down under, no contact worthy of it, and that's it. So, he doesn't get it for me. And this isn't a case of just bad service. Nobody looks at the races today. No one looked up for it after 1-0.
No, indeed. The first substitution, Pratt.
Was glad to see Pratt again.
I felt sorry for him because he came on, but I think the game was gone by then.
Yeah, it would. It was not nice that Pratt came on with nothing to go at, but I like to see Dennis Pratt back in a Leicester shirt. It was nice to see him play. Again, though, unfortunately, when he came on, the game was dead and buried, and our touches on the ball were very few and far between. I'm not going to give him a U because I'm going to stick with a little bit of, it was nice to see him get some football back in a Leicester shirt, and he didn't do anything wrong. I'm going to give Pratt a D.
A D. Yeah,
you
said nice to see him, as I said, to see him nice.
Like Bruce Forsyth.
Yeah, exactly. Good game. But it wasn't actually, no. Daka. It was a case of today, wasn't it?
I heard him come on, but I don't remember him doing anything. I don't remember hearing his name. I mean, it was an awful game to be listening to on BBC. I tell you that much, because the Leicester website was down for me and everything else was wrong and it was horrible, but I didn't hear his name much again. So, and I like the fact that, you know, we've probably potentially seen how the changes are going to go. But again, with predictability, Dak is going to be either like for like, or he's going to be put on and Ian Acho is going to be brought on, and he's going to play either on his own or in a two. He didn't do anything. He didn't get a chance to do anything, really. So I'm going to give him a U. Now, there's no happy feeling like seeing Pratt in a Leicester shirt that saves him, I'm afraid, Daka.
Yeah. And the final one, Mr. Iheanacho.
I'm giving him a C. He created, he opened Arsenal up. The game might have been 4-2, it might have been dead or buried, but he opened Arsenal up. He stretched them again. He got Castagne involved. He set up the goal. He set up the goal that made it 3-2. That, you know, like I said, for them 12 seconds, we were in a game again. But Brendan, the rating is on the wall, my friend. 8-2, we stretched them, we pushed them hard. It doesn't matter if they took foot off the gas. We have seen football does crazy things. I'm not saying it would have happened, but anyway.
Yeah.
I'm giving him that because he came on, he got an assist, and he actually did something to affect the game in a positive light for Leicester.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. I can't really disagree with many of those. our best player, and this is on the BBC website where the fans have voted, the best player, and you know what the best player's score was from 1 to 10?
I would say 6.23.
5.04.
Oh, was that optimistic? Jesus Christ.
I know. And that was Inacho, followed by Madison, followed by Dewsbury Hall, Pratt, Inacho, Justin Ndidi, Fofana, Evans, Castagna, Ward, Amati. Vardy got less points than Amati today. That's
Amati weren't that bad, were he? Then if Vardy's getting worse,
no.
The favourite child.
Problem though with Evans is whilst he does take his time for a good pass, he then allows the opposing team to come on to us. I mean, we're all going to have different views. The Red Imp is just sitting at the last minute. Man United going down. Well, I don't think so, but it wouldn't be funny. Right, I need to go and drop the kids off at the pool desperately. So, Brad, thank you so much. Matter of opinion, where can people find you?
They can find my YouTube channel that you've just stated there, A Matter of Opinion, over on YouTube. You can find that on my Twitter page, which is at Full Time Focus. That's all one word. There's no hyphen in it. It's just at Full Time Focus. Click the link in the bio there. That'll take you to my YouTube channel. It does exactly what it says on Tim. We'll have a weekly topic up for debate, up for discussion. You guys can ask to come on the show. You can get comments in, and we just basically discuss the topic for that week, and we give our opinions on it. It's free space for people to give their opinions rightly back. It doesn't matter if you're the only one that has that opinion. It's what I created the channel for. So, yeah, well, if you could check them out, that'd be great.
Yeah, and you've also, that link is in the description below on YouTube. Brad, thanks very much, mate. Have a good, well, what's left of the weekend, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, well, you'll see you next week, mate. Yeah.
Take care, buddy. Cheers.
Take care, mate.
Bye. Thank you very much to Brad for coming on there. Please subscribe if you haven't done. Smash the likes if you are already subscribed. And I will see you Monday night at 7 o'clock for the Premier League and football review. Until then, take care of yourselves. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And don't do anything I won't enjoy. Good night now.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye and see you next time.
Better like it too, or I'll be back.
Cool, I'm out of here. Ooh, that's a wrap.
Some people are on the pitch.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.